Hello and welcome to Really Cool People, a podcast produced by Schweitzer Church. I'm your host, Jason Leininger. This is a place to hear stories of really cool people. Sometimes the people who tell their own stories think that they're just ordinary folks. But as C.S. Lewis said, there are no ordinary people. You and I have never talked to a mere mortal. The hope is in telling their stories and in us hearing stories, we will be inspired, encouraged, and challenged through moments of serendipity. Today, we have the joy of being introduced to Barbara Cobb. Barbara's going to talk about her childhood, and some listeners are going to find the stories of her childhood abuse challenging. We're also going to hear about her career as a photojournalist. We're going to hear about her volunteerism at a food pantry. And we'll also hear about the loss that she recently faced in the death of her husband. Barbara has a great story. And it's a story of somebody who's healing. So today, it's with great joy that we welcome Barbara Cobb. And today we welcome Barbara Cobb, and we're so glad you're here to have this time together. And Barbara, I just want to invite you to begin by sharing your story with us.
Well, I will begin, by the grace of God go I. I came from an abusive childhood, a mother, and through that it was a long healing. But what it did do is made me stronger and to be able to face things that I didn't think I probably would have ever faced. And I came out of it, and it's not an easy road, but God is with you, even though you wonder where he is certain times. But I'm grateful to where I am today because of it. And I was growing up, I played the piano and was in choir, and we were in church. My dad made it, you know, very important that we all went to church all the time. And so I was in the church choir and with the youth ministry, MYI, I think is what it used to be called, and loved church camp. And then I have been blessed. God has blessed me with many talents, and I am just so grateful for that. It is great therapy for me. I am able to sketch and to knit and crochet. I think that what I have gone through to get to where I am today has made me compassionate and empathy and understanding for where someone's anger is coming from their past or from what has happened to them or they've been hurt. And I think I can see that when I'm working at the food pantry.
Barbara, can I ask when you were born?
November 30th, 1950.
November 30th, 1950. It's a very good year.
It is, because if you ask me how old I am, all I have to do is take 50 minus the year instead of having to worry about.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Midway City, Oklahoma. Tinker Air Force Base, just east of Oklahoma City.
How long did you live there?
Until I got out of college, probably 21 or 22. And then I moved to Oklahoma City.
What do you remember about your life as a kid?
We lived in a neighborhood where kids were everywhere. And we had fields and there weren't fences in our backyards and stuff. So when you went outside to play, there was plenty of people to play with. And we got into a lot of trouble and mischief, but it was fun.
What do you mean you got into mischief and trouble?
It's like if you ever like ring somebody's doorbell and then run.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you do that often?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. They got to know our names, so we had to quit.
What were some of the music or movies or entertainment that you would partake of?
We were outside until 9 growing up. Not really movies or TV.
Yeah. How about music? Do you have a soundtrack? Do you have like, When you go back and think about other days, are there songs you listen to, things that you pull up? And
I mainly just remember Nat King Cole at Christmas.
Yeah?
Yeah, always. And rock and roll. I mean, it was the genuine rock and roll beginning.
Do you have any favorites in rock and roll artists?
No, not really. I didn't have a radio, so I didn't really listen to me unless I was in the car. My first car was a 57 Chevy, and I loved it.
Wow. How old were you when you got that car?
16. We had to share it, though. There's four of us, so the car was shared, but I got to drive it to school.
Like four siblings?
Yes. Older brother, and I have a younger brother and a younger sister.
And you got to drive to school?
Yes. I was a studette.
That's fantastic. Then what did you do after high school?
Went to beauty school, became a beautician, and then went to college. Like you could go to beauty school during like high school, because I had taken so many hours that I didn't have to spend a full day in my senior years. So my cousin and I went to beauty school.
So did you learn how to like cut hair and
everything
else?
Yeah.
Did you ever practice that?
Yeah. In fact, my next door neighbor, her mother, I did her hair. And then I would do mom's things, yeah.
Where'd you go to college?
Oklahoma State. Cowboys.
What'd you study?
Business. Just to be able to be, I wanted to be, of course, when I went to college, you didn't have all these choices of degrees. You know, you, especially females, you would like go into business or something like that, be an office worker.
Uh-huh.
And so I did that. And then I wanted to be able to be qualified for, like, if a certain industry would go down, I would be able to, you know, change into going to another, like a medical or oil or whatever, through the skills that I had. So that was important to me.
What did you end up doing with your degree? How did that shape your life after you graduated?
Since it was a business degree, I was able to office stuff, but it wasn't like I was able to get work.
Mm-hmm.
Constant work. So that was good.
Now, one of the things I know about you is that you're a photographer. You took a lot of photos. Can you tell us about that?
Yes.
What that experience was like?
Yes. I loved it. I had a roommate and she started dating this guy who owned his own lab. And the lab would take pictures of the football games and then they're in basketball and the pictures would be like put on the wall, made one of those huge things, and you put them all on the wall and they go down into the locker room and stuff. So she was dating him, and so then I started doing photography and got to go down on the field. I can remember my first OU Texas game. I was so excited. It was so overwhelming to be down there. And I loved it. I really loved sports photography. And then I continued on with it with them. And it got to the point where it's a man's field.
How so?
Reporters and most photographers are males. Okay. When I was doing it. And all the sports people were male. And they thought that they could say or do whatever they wanted to do.
Hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that was prevalent. So I just got to the point after 5 years doing it, and I quit doing it. And during the times that I was photographing, I was the photographer for OU at the Final Four in Kansas City. So that was really exciting to do that, but they lost. And when they lose, you're not going to make any money. Because you could like take the photos and take it to the office, and then they choose the photos, and then you could sell the photos that you give to them.
Okay.
So.
Did you make pretty good money being a sports photographer?
No. I worked so I could do it. You know, I had a full-time job when I was doing it. Huh. I don't know how. You could not do it alone. But it was fun. It was fun going to the games and just being a part of it and being down on the field. You saw football a lot differently because I would – you'd have to, like, take a picture of the scoreboard so you'd know what game it was. Because, you know, you get so wrapped up in the game that you don't even remember who they played or if they win. Because you don't get to see it that way. You see it by, you know, shot by shot.
And I'm forgetting, because we've had digital cameras for so long,
yeah,
that you were doing this before digital yes. cameras.
Yes. Yes, it's me. And since I volunteered at the lab after I got off work so that I could, you know, learn how to do the film, process the film, and then see how you do the photos and stuff. So after that, I was able to turn I was living in a 2-bedroom house, and I made 1 bedroom into a lab, a dark room. Mm-hmm. So then I could do my own photos. And since they would take black and white more than they would color, so I could do them at home. And then sell them. That was fun. But you have to choose. Either do what you love to be good at it, but you can't do that and be married.
And when did you choose?
Marriage.
When did you get married?
In 1989.
Who'd you marry?
Gary Kopp.
Do you want to say anything about your marriage to Gary?
Gary had, you know, he passed away and he had a very kind and loving soul. He was quiet, but he was so gentle, you know, and he was like a manager of like a Hobby Lobby, which brought us to Springfield. And he was able to handle the employees and customers and stuff like that so well, you know, and calming and stuff like that.
What did you guys like to do together?
We loved, like, shopping or, like, taking discovery drives.
What did you discover out on your drives?
The area around where we lived. Since we both grew up in Oklahoma, and, mm-hmm. you know, we moved to Springfield when the Hobby Lobby on Northwest Expressway, not the interstate, that's what brought us down here. He opened up that store, which I love because I could get 10% off on all my crafts.
Okay. Now, what kind of crafts do you do?
I knit. I've been very blessed with God-given talent, photography, and I knit, and I crochet, and I sketch, and garden.
One of the things you mentioned earlier was that you volunteer in the food pantry that is held at Schweitzer Church. And if I'm remembering right, you've either knitted or crocheted some things that you've given away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I made like with string, I knitted table runners and placemats and purses for people here at church. And the reason what brought me to the food pantry was I had, I don't know if you remember, Sylvia Sneed. She was my best friend, and that's what brought me to Schweitzer, because she did not grow up with Jesus and didn't really know much anything except for like Christmas holidays, stuff like that. And she got diagnosed with cancer, and so I came with her to go to Alpha here at Schweitzer, and that's what brought me here. Huh. And then when she started going to church here, then I came to church and sat with her, and we got into small groups and stuff like that. And the reason I went to the food pantry is in memory of her, because she loved working at the food pantry. It was when we used to, not computer, but we used to have to put it out on paper.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So how long have you been volunteering at the food pantry then?
Probably 11 or 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I started out as a substitute person. Whenever somebody was sick or something, yeah. Then they would call me. because I couldn't get in because there was they had the people that they needed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They had a full docket of volunteers.
Yes.
So then you had to start off as a like a substitute volunteer.
Yes. Taking the shifts. And then we had like 2-hour shifts. And then I would take whatever shit that they could.
What keeps you, what's kept you coming back for so long? Like, I mean, 11, 12 years of volunteering at the food pantry. What's gotten under your skin? What's in the vibe that you love about it?
I think a lot, you know, a lot of it, the passion and compassion from what I went through as a child. You know, I can understand what it puts me in, like a space where it doesn't take me long to get to the point where they are when they come and talk. And I know what it's like to not have money for food. And it's just a passion that I have, compassion for the people. And it's my family. You know, the food pantry gang's my family. Schweitzer's my family.
Hmm.
And I just want to be with them.
I think it was Henry Nouwen, who was a Catholic priest and has been a pretty significant inspiration to a lot of others, who talked about the idea of being a wounded healer.
I can understand that.
You want to say more about that?
Yeah, my childhood was pretty rough. My mother was very abusive. If she had a wooden spoon, she'd use that or a brush, or she would make you go out and get a branch off the mimosa tree. And that's why I will never have a mimosa tree in my yard.
Huh.
Yeah. And bring it in. And I can remember the it's like she became a different person because the rage in her eyes was what was so scary.
So if you face that kind of trauma, then how did you come to a place of finding healing or finding forgiveness? What was
the forgiveness was hard because I wanted, you know, you think if I forgive her, then, you know, she's off scot-free and doesn't have to be accountable or anything. And it was such a secret that nobody talked about it or nobody acknowledged that she did it. It was, you know, and it's like, that's what was made me angry. She came across with other people like she's just this really nice person. And she was never accountable for it. But then that wasn't my place to do that.
So did you ever get to a place where you could forgive?
Yes. What? I forgave for myself. Hmm. And I think that in learning about forgiveness, I think that's part of the forgiveness I think a lot of people don't understand. Because I didn't understand it first. I'm not forgiving her. I'm forgiving her for me. Hmm. You have to forgive for yourself and let it go.
How's that shaped or both your understanding of faith or your understanding of who God is? How's that experience shaped you in that regard?
It led me to Him in a deep desire. And it, you know, abuse makes you, to me, it made me stronger and a fighter and, you know, to not allow anybody else to do that. Mm-hmm. That was really, it still is big to me, you know. I had to do it, take it from my mother, but I'm not going to take it from anybody else like that. So it really did make me stronger and I could see it in other people and I could see it, you know, what's causing anger or why people are treating you like that. It's not that, it's what it is touching. But with God in a long, you know, long road, which probably isn't a long road when you look back at it, healing, forgiving. It doesn't mean that I didn't want to be with her, though, after I forgave her.
Hmm.
Because she had not changed.
Did she always live in Oklahoma?
Yes. She grew up in Colgate, Oklahoma.
You just made a facial expression.
I did. It was such a small town.
I take it you didn't like going there.
No, because her, you know, her mother was exactly like my mom. That's where she got it.
Hmm.
So it's a cursed generation of abuse. And that's probably why she chose me.
Your other siblings didn't face the same thing?
That is bad.
Mm-hmm. So, as you think about how you wake up every day, you know, living into the future, and take a look across your lifespan, what kinds of dreams did you have that are still present with you right now that you're living with or working on or looking forward to still?
I think it's since Gary passed away, it's like I want to be content in the moment and not like, you know, I remember when I was a photographer and all I wanted to do is just do the final four and then, you know, my family and everybody would just be so excited and stuff. Well, you get there and it's not it's not there. When you get to that one goal without God or whatever, it's not there. That is, so I feel like that if you focus more on like the dream or whatever, and you only go that road, that you're going to miss out on the journey. So I believe the journey is the dream.
Hmm.
And what you do on your way in that journey is what you find could even change your dream. So the dream that you're dreaming or things that you might want to do may not really be what expectations, what you think that they will be, but then you've spent your whole life or so many years doing that, and then you're going.
So it doesn't seem fulfilling or it doesn't fulfill, like you've got a finished product and you're like, oh, it doesn't have the payoff I thought. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's not what I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have, you know, your perspective. I learned from that was it's the moment, you know, like the journey to the thing was more fun than the thing that you got.
Huh. So you mentioned a couple times that you do sketches.
Yes.
And I've seen a couple of your sketches. So I imagine that a sketch starts off with a beginning, an idea, and then it goes on a journey.
Yes.
And then it has a finale. What do you like to sketch? And what's that beginning and journey and finale like for you?
It's the vision. Just like this, you know, my Easter card was an answered prayer. I had not sketched since Gary passed away 3 years ago. Didn't even pick up a pencil because I couldn't do it. And then I kept praying for it. And then I got the sketch for an Easter card this year. And it has to flow with the joy. And, you know, like many times I'll look at different things and objects, and my photography helped me do that. And if I see something that I really, really feel joy, then I start sketching that. And then many things come from that. So a lot of times I don't have a ending picture, what it will be, but just the object that I've chosen to begin sketch brings out other things. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. Do you have a favorite sketch that you've done?
Yeah, I've done a lot of snowmen for Christmas.
Is there a lot of snow in Oklahoma?
No. I love the snow here. That snow turns, it snows and then it turns black from the dirt in the road, from the red mud, red dirt.
What do you like about the snow here?
I love it.
Yeah?
I love it. It is the prettiest snow. Big flakes, beautiful, and it just covers these trees. And I get, yeah, that's another thing, trees with the snow on it. That is a really fun to sketch for me. It's just good. Sketching is very good therapy for me.
Well, I think it oftentimes is good therapy for all kinds of people.
I would hope so.
You know, expressing yourself in some form or fashion in a creative way, it gives a lot of people expression.
Well, and the joy, if I don't have the joy when I'm sketching or when I grab the pen and get the paper, then I just have to quit, because that's what I was struggling with when Gary died. Mm-hmm. I could sketch, but it wasn't really sketching, because I want to sketch joy so that when they open the card, they feel the joy. Hmm. That's really important to me.
So when you look into the future these days, what are some things you're anticipating? Some things that, like, even thinking about them create joy within you?
Gary's death, it turns your whole life, it turned my whole life upside down. And the moments are more to me than what I'm expecting in the journey. Because I see, you know, the minute he died, I instantly, my whole perspective on everything changed. Like, you're going to get upset about that, really? That kind of thing, you know?
So like a
deeper meaning of things. And I feel, you know, feel at peace to just, you know, I just want to grasp and grab the moment that I'm in. That's the journey that I keep talking about. It's a journey. And I want to enjoy every step of the journey instead of, okay, I went to here and now I got here. Well, what happened to the journey? How'd you get there? I don't know.
So if you think about this past week, you got any moments that really shine? Things you've held on to?
Yeah, like at the food pantry. Mm-hmm. It's a joy when, like, people the 60s and over, when they come in once a month, you get to know them. And it's a joy to see their faces because they're so funny and kind and excited to be there. So that's nice. And just that us getting together, like Wednesdays, that's my favorite day. We're so close. It's like we're a family gathering to break bread together.
It's a fascinating, fascinating description of Wednesdays. Is that something that has been active in your life? Or is it something that's like, you know, like, has it been present for much of it? Or is it something that's here in the past few years?
No, it's always been there.
Yeah.
That's what brings me, you know, I just love coming because I get to be with my brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. And we enjoy each other. We get along, and it's just like big gathering with family. Mm-hmm. They're my family. Mm. I need them.
This is a question that may sound too limiting, but maybe you can narrow it in. Who are some people you really admire that you've looked up to over the course of your life? And maybe even people now that you've admired that have left really positive imprints in your own life?
My father. Mm-hmm. Even though he couldn't change the situation, but he was always there. He had always been there. And he was a calm and loving person. And just a gentle soul that just, yeah, it's my father. And then Kristen, I admire her, and it's very nice, like, talking with her. Our group is, I feel the same way about our group as I do the pantry. Oh. They're my family.
Kristen is she's another artist.
Oh, yes.
And she's somebody who is in a small group with you. Yeah.
And I admire her work.
Yeah, she's a fantastic artist.
She is. I don't do faces, and she can.
Well.
It's just been so nice for me to be able to have these people in my life when Gary passed away, because I was not alone. They were there. No matter, you know, what I needed, I could call them, and I just feel very close to them and family. Mm-hmm. I think throughout my whole life, I've been looking for family. even though I have family. But
been looking for family. What?
Like a mother, you know.
What kind of family?
That I could go and would be accepted and there would not be fights or anything when I went in the door. I feel like I have a big heart. And I think that people, I've always believed that if you really like somebody or love somebody or they did something, you need to tell them because you may not see them tomorrow or they may die and you would never be able to tell them. I remember Elda was at God Lunch Bunch. She said, don't put flowers on my grave. If you're going to send me flowers, let me keep my flowers while I'm alive. And I thought, amen. That's really important to me to do that.
One of the things I've noticed about you is that you have a big laugh.
I do.
Where'd you get that from?
I'm not sure. Because my dad does not laugh. I mean, he laughs, but he not didn't really. I don't know. It's just a joy. I think I have a good sense of humor. And I do enjoy laughing. To make fun of the things that... Probably a lot of it is that I make fun of the things that I do. Dad would do that, too. He would do something stupid, and then you're going, yeah, I did that. Can you believe that? You what could have happened with that? So I don't want to take myself seriously. And just like, you know, because I'm not perfect. And if you're expecting me to be perfect or if I do something that you think is totally wrong or out of the picture, well, I'm going to laugh it off. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I did do that. And I think that I have a lot of joy in my heart. I'm very grateful for so much. I'm just so grateful that I found God and that I totally believe that, you know, in him and that he has brought me through the grief and continues to. And you just know he's always there. It doesn't matter what you do. Mm. It may be stupid or something, but he's going to be there. And that when I used to walk Boomer in and when I walk Coda, I always asked Jesus to come to walk with me. And I said, I don't want anything. I just want your presence.
So do you have a favorite picture or passage of scripture that describes God to you or that you like I don't want to say defines God, but it's like it's a defining picture of God in your life?
He's my father. And I was so close to my father. And I trust him in specifically, the only thing I think of is by the grace of God go I. Because he's always there. Mm-hmm. And I know that. And I would not be able to live without that. I don't think. I don't know how people don't believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, Barbara, are there any questions that you've been waiting for me to ask that I have not asked?
No, I love hugs, and I'm so grateful for, you know, to be able to work Sunday, to be able to see everybody that comes in, and I can greet them, and to let them know how thankful I am that they are there through my hug or my smile. That's very important to me, and to my friends, like on the pantry and stuff, greet with a hug. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because nobody in my family does. Ever did. I don't know where I got that, but I've always felt that way.
Barbara, it's been a great joy having you and listening to some of your story and learning more about you. And thanks for sharing your story with us today. I like to ask people at the end if they've got a final word or a piece of sage advice that they'd like to share with us.
By the grace of God, go high. That is, I depend upon that one. Because without that, I would not be anything.
All right.
You know, I thank you. It has been an honor that you chose me. And I hope that you do edit somebody thinks I said.
Well, we'll leave that up to the engineer and the editors.
Okay.
Okay. Well, God bless you, Barbara.
And God bless you.
Well, thank you so much for tuning in today. And a big thank you to Barbara for sharing her story. In listening to that story, I hope you were inspired, encouraged, and challenged, and that you begin to behold and listen to the really cool people that are around you. The Really Cool People podcast is produced by Schweitzer Church, Springfield, Missouri. Taylor Likes is the executive producer and editor. I'm your host, Jason Leininger. Until next time, you can help us by liking, reviewing, and sharing this podcast.